Welcome to a brand new Best Podcast in Baseball, recorded here in Jupiter, Florida, with Cardinals infielder and now outfielder Thomas Sejesi. Thomas has questions of how I vote for the MVP and for the Hall of Fame. I got questions about how he adjusts bat to a bat, and we talk moments after he stepped off the field from his first start in center. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Best Podcast in Baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by Cardinals infielder, outfielder Thomas Sejesi, outside the team's clubhouse in Jupiter, Florida. You'll hear the construction going on behind us. Over the past year and a half, Thomas Sejesi and I have obviously talked. I've interviewed him a few times, but he always comes back with questions, lots of questions about coverage, about Hall of Fame voting, about measuring stats, about using stats, about MVP voting. So decided, hey, why not invite him on the podcast and see if he might flip the script on me? We start by talking about how he just moments earlier walked off the field from his first start in center for the Cardinals. His first game in center field in, I'll just let him tell you. Here we go. All right, you just stepped off the field moments ago after playing center field for the first time in how long, and how was the view?
That was the first time ever, I think, from what I can remember. I played right when I was like 9, I think. Yeah, I did. Okay. The view is good. It's interesting because it's so far, and sometimes it's the infield is weird. It's hard to see with the fans, the white in the background.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what it is in center. The difference between BP and the gain is like, BP, you get a dark background.
Right.
But yeah, it's like weird. It's a little weird, but it was good. It feels good.
It is in BP. You have the turtle shell right there. And so, you know, like you kind of, and everybody's milling around, right? And so the depth changes when all of that goes away.
Yeah, it gets tougher to see. But it's not too bad. You got more time to make a judgment. So, yeah.
You had a play. You hit. You had a play in center, and you hit a ball to center. So that's a good day, right?
Great day, yeah. Had a play. I was waiting for one. I was excited to get one.
Yeah.
And it finally happened, and just an easy kind of pop up, and it was fun. High five to everybody in the dugout.
And you had the best view probably of the catch of the day too, with Nathan Robin. Did he rob a home run in right field? Nathan Church was playing right field against the Mets on the same day that J.J. Weatherholt hit a home run to dead center field, about two stories up on the batter's eye. But Nathan, did he steal a home run there?
I think he did.
Okay.
I think he did. What a play.
Yeah, you had a great view of that.
It's so cool to see him, like, now that I'm learning, check the wall, see how much time he has, get sprint to the spot, check the wall, see where he's at, see where the wall's at, and, like, just time everything perfectly. He's a good outfielder.
Is that something you're enjoying about this transition, is learning kind of the nuances of outfield and, like, where, like, when the ball is nowhere near you, you have to run to even be a part of the play, but the part you play in that play?
Yeah, but I'd say that's simpler in outfield than it is in the infield.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Because the infield, we're running everywhere.
Yeah, you're involved in everything.
And you're like, you have to be here in the cutoff. You have to be here when he's cutting home and you're at second and it's down the line. You have to follow the shortstop. And then, you know, it's like much more thinking, I feel like. In the outfield, it's kind of like communicate. It's probably a little simpler, but it is things that I'm learning, like just different communications and backing up bases. Backing up bases is pretty much like just run in.
Right.
And then figure out where the ball's going to go.
Yeah.
You know?
To try not to get in a pickle. Is that the
Exactly. It's just like, but like that ball to Church, if it goes off the wall, I got to go help him out.
You know? Right, that's right. Like, that's your play if it caroms, right? And then you had to carom in left field, right? Had you practiced balls off the wall in your first?
Yesterday, before the game, ironically. Okay. So
right before the game, and then you get an exact play like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those are like, you know, are gotten pretty simple.
Yeah.
Pick up the ball, throw it in. The weird thing is throwing it blindly.
Right, without looking, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You get the ball, and then you have to throw, and, like, you're looking as you throw.
Yeah.
Which, in the infield, sure, you do sometimes, but, like, I've made probably a million throws to first base. Mm-hmm. So, the off chance that there's a backhand, I'm like, I know exactly where the bag is. But you don't really know where the person is.
Right.
You have to, like, look for the person. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. I was like, whoa.
Well, is part of it, though, you have to trust the guy to be in the right spot? Like, you have to trust your cutoff, just like you when you are the cutoff guy.
Yeah.
Like, you have to trust him to be in the right spot.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Lovely. But it's just, there's so much range out there. Like, the infield, you feel the backhand, and it's like you know kind of where you're at in the field. Mm-hmm. Outfield, you don't really, I feel like you don't really always know where you're at.
Yeah.
In my short experience.
Right. Yeah, you're 2 games, one in left, one in center. What do you need to get out of spring games to go into the regular season and say, yeah, I'm good, I'm comfortable? Or are you already at that spot where you feel like going to a regular season game and go, yeah, okay, I can do this?
I think I'd fare decently. I think I need a couple more reps just to see what it is. But, I mean, in BP shagging today, I was like, oh, this is okay. Just be an athlete, go catch the ball, and then hit the cutoff, man.
What a stress this is. You had your first start in left field one day. The next day you have the first start in forever, or ever, in center field. And then 72 hours from now you'll be playing shortstop for Team Italy. Is that how this week plays out for you?
Yeah, I guess so. I haven't thought about it like that, but yeah. Yeah, but that should be a lot of fun. And
yeah.
Shortstop is... I've played a lot of shortstop in my life, so...
Well, you got 2 games already here at shortstop, and you know, all the time in the minors at it.
100%, so...
What are you looking forward to about the World Baseball Classic? What was your level of interest, and how excited when they named you, and what do you want to get from that tournament?
I just think it's kind of like one of those things where it's an opportunity that you can't pass up, you know? Just for the experience and... being around, like, I don't know, just like, it's different baseball, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's more amped. I just feel like it's gonna be a lot of fun. It's just, and to represent a country, represent Italy, I just think that's it's like a little bigger than baseball. So
have you talked to other folks who have been involved in it, or I mean, you've watched from afar, but have you talked with
I talked to Nude a little bit. I talked to Cope Kopernik a little bit. Cope said it's super loud, you know, and it's packed and everything. And you know, you hear a lot of stories that are like, whoa.
Yeah. That's cool. All right, I've enjoyed the chances we've had where I've interviewed you, but you often flip the script on me and have lots of questions, so I'm eager to see where this goes, because I promised that I would turn the podcast over to you to quiz me a bit. So what we can go back and forth here. We'll play, I guess, a little verbal pepper, for lack of a better term. What do you ask me about my Hall of Fame ballot, my MVP ballot. You've challenged me on some thinking about it, so what do you got?
Well, I was thinking about this a little bit yesterday in preparation. I was just thinking, what is it like? What do you... I want you to take me through, like, what you do, what it actually is in terms of voting. Okay. All the voting you do.
Okay.
How you got there. I think you mentioned you have to spend... it's like your senior most writing.
Yeah.
Your senior most... the senior most beat writer. But yeah, like what it is, what forms you fill out, and I have plenty more questions.
Okay.
That came
with. All right. So the Hall of Fame ballot, you have to be a member in good standing for 10 consecutive years of the Baseball Writers Association of America. And then you have to continually every year kind of register. Like, the Hall sends out a thing, you click on it, you go through all the, like, yes, I'm still covering, yes, I still work for this paper, yes, I've done it this often, yes, I'm still active, all that stuff, right? And then they mail you a paper ballot for the Hall of Fame. So it's 10 years. At least 10 years. Members of the BBWA are the ones that wrote for the for the Hall of Fame. And it is it's a paper ballot, and you know, you can deal with it what you wish. You know, I have gotten slightly, I guess, romantic, maybe some would just say cliche or goofy about it. Like when I voted for Larry Walker, I mailed it from the post box near Coors Field. You know, I thought, all right, I'm going to be in Colorado for the holidays. It's due right around that time. I'm going to mail it from the post box that's right across the street from Coors Field. When I got my first ballot for the Hall of Fame, I took it to my boyhood home where I grew up and mailed it from the post box there, the same post box where I would have mailed off checks to get or baseball cards to try to get autographed, letters to get a subscription to the Yankee magazine, checks to get baseball abstract, whatever. Like that same post box, that's where I mailed my first Hall of Fame ballot.
That's awesome.
So I get a little sappy.
So cool.
Yeah.
So do people just not fill it out sometimes?
Yeah, some folks don't return their ballots if they don't think anybody is worthy. Other folks will send back a blank ballot. I don't like the blank ballots because those count against everybody. You know, if it takes 3 votes to overcome a non-vote, right? You have to get 75%.
Yeah.
So every non-vote, you need 3 other riders to vote for you to get elected. If somebody puts in a blank ballot, it's like negating, to me, it's just completely negating the ballot. It's like withdrawing more than 2 votes from everybody. So I don't really like that. If you have a protest vote or something like that, just don't send it in, and then it won't count. But if you do send in a blank ballot, it does count. The Hall of Fame does count it, and every player then on that ballot has to overcome it to get to 75.
What if you don't like the who's on the ballot? What if you don't think the people are worthy?
Then you can not send a ballot back at all, and then you don't count against anything. You just didn't support anybody. You're not supporting anybody, but you're also not actively taking away from others, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Hall of Fame, and then you also do MVP.
I do the MVP. I've also voted for the rookie, Cy Young, and a manager of the year. I started on the beat, rookie of the year. You know, you move up. Every city that has a team gets 2 ballots. So the Cardinals, St. Louis will get 2 National League manager, rookie, Cy Young, MVP. So 8 ballots total. This coming year, we're going to introduce a new award, reliever of the year, relief pitcher of the year. And that too, they'll get 2 ballots. An AL town like Minnesota, right, Minneapolis, they'll get 2 ballots for every American League thing. In St. Louis, it's traditionally been done, I think this is what you're talking about, with like the senior beat writer. It's traditionally been that the person who sees the most games or is the senior on the beat gets the MVP ballot. So for many decades, it was the late Rick Hummel, my Hall of Fame colleague who covered the Cardinals for 4 decades. I've had an MVP ballot for 12, 13 years now. And so that's something that it's interesting because like you can think, you know, there are times where I'm like, man, I wish I had a Cy Young because that would be like kind of cool to vote for. Right.
Yeah.
And I liked voting for the Cy Young quite a bit. But in a way, though, it's like, OK, you can kind of think all season long about like, how is this playing out? Who stands out? You can talk to people. I like talking to other players, managers, about like who do they think who's really shaping games, who's really impacting games. Like I like to think of valuable as a synonym for influential. So who's the most influential on games?
That's interesting. And I know you do your homework and you look at advanced stats and stats that you view as important in terms of what you just described, who's influential.
Yeah.
But are there some people where you're just like, bro, this guy's looking at batting average, home run, and RBIs, which is old school and sure might tell some part of the story. But nowadays, that's not how people measure success.
Or the game. Right. Yeah. So that's changing. And I mean, look at the Cy Young, right?
And how do you know, too? Like, how do you know who does that and who doesn't?
Well, all the ballots are public, for the BBWAA, not all the Hall of Fame ballots, but we voted years ago to make all of the ballots for the MVP, Cy Young, rookie, manager, and the relief will be the same. They're all public, so all of our names go on them. We're not allowed to share them until after they've been announced. That's also become more and more important because of sports betting, as you can imagine. But once they're announced, we release all the ballots. So you can see who left folks off. You can see where I ranked people. You can, you know, the Philly fans could get really mad at me this past year because I didn't vote Kyle Schwarber high enough, and they can totally ignore the fact that I had Sanchez super high on the MVP. But I got yelled at. I didn't have Schwarber high enough for them. And I mean, maybe they're right. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. It was the opinion that I could go with. But I mean, Perdomo had such an amazing year.
Perdomo had a great year.
I mean, Perdomo had a great
year.
Very
underrated season.
And you talk about influential on games. Think about the number of ways he influenced games, because he was superb defensively. Yeah. He had a dynamite offensive year. Oh, and he like had that power growth, right? I mean, he was really, really influential for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
But then how do you measure that against somebody? So Perdomo obviously had an amazing year, both defensive, offensively. I think he's still base. He's a good base runner, too. But Schwarber had, obviously he's a DH, so he doesn't play defense. Mm-hmm. But he had the monster power numbers.
Right. And really big, like for him, like the big average, the big OPS, the big,
yes. Yeah. So how do you compare that? Like, how much more is that? How is that? How do you compare that to somebody who does everything? You know, like,
yeah.
If somebody hits 330 with 40 homers, but they don't play defense, but somebody else hits 300 with 20 and they play defense too, it's like, where is the line?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can go to WAR, right? WAR, wins above replacement, takes into account defense, both Baseball Reference and FanGraphs.
How do they know that?
It's, what do you mean? Like, well, it's like, so it's against a slightly below average, right? And they pour in a bunch of other rates and counting numbers into what kind of performance, I guess, would impact this amount of wins. So it's based on, like, it's there are so many wins available to teams, and how this player, if you carve those up, how this player contributed to them, and it's compared over time, right? Like, so it's a huge data set. All, like, previous decades inform the current performance, right? And so it looks like runs created, runs stopped,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a counting stat against them. Yeah.
But so, the defensive numbers are interesting to me because that's hard to, like, a lot of those are a little subjective in a sense.
Well, less and less so because you have now StatCast and you're getting all this data. So if everybody can agree on, like, this is a good jump, this is good closing speed, this, like, as soon as you think about, like, how we measure or we have the measurements for routes and how efficient they are.
Yeah.
Now you can bake that in as opposed to eyeballing it, right? Now there's actual data to show you what you went to.
So my next thing, this leads me to my next question, which kind of veers off.
Can I answer? Okay, so you ask about how you compare, like how do you compare different things? So I sit down and I put together a grid and look at a whole range of stats, and then I look where like 15, 16, 17 players rank in all of those stats, and they include defense, they include advanced stats. I put home runs, I put RBIs in there because those, I mean, they matter too, you know. Yeah. they're counting number.
Okay.
And I just look at like a total picture, like, you know, you can do that, and there are times where like somebody will be, they'll rank one in seven of the 10 of the categories, right? And I'll add them all up, and they'll have the lowest score at the end because they ranked the highest in that many categories. And that gives me kind of a frame of reference for how a player total season impacts. The higher they rank in all of these different disciplines, the lower the score is that I give them at the end. And then I can look at that list.
That's a pretty cool way to do it.
Yeah. I like
so it. What do other people do then? Are they just eyeballing it and being like,
No.
Or do they take it seriously?
Oh my gosh, yeah. No, I mean, we have text chains going, we have conversations going, we go back and forth with each other.
With all
other voters,
400 other voters.
So there's only 30 voters for like an MVP, but for the Hall of Fame, there's like 400
voters.
Yeah.
Dang. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So you would there's only two for every team, so 15 and 15, 30 voters. So we go back, we talk. I mean, we
30 voters. Okay, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, we talk, and you know, we get input. We have writers we trust, and I have scouts I talk to, and managers. I do go to players. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that the Cardinals had Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado as two MVP candidates. Yeah. Like, who better to talk to about who should win the MVP than Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado about each other? Like, what are they? What do you guys view of each other? And so I can use that.
Where did you vote Arenado at?
Nice. I voted him third, I believe.
Because that's what he got.
That's what he ended up with.
Yeah, I think it was third. I'm pretty sure it was third. Somebody is screaming right now at this podcast saying, "No, I'm pretty sure I did third."
So okay.
He led the league in WAR, so you could make an argument for one.
Yeah, why would you choose Goldie ahead of Arenado?
There's no wrong. I think it was just like the force of the offense that Goldschmidt put up, and then that win probability added, like the overall like influence impact on games and what he did.
Interesting. Okay, so who's the other MVP voter here?
It changes each year, because we've had some changes on the beat. So it's been Katie Wu of The Athletic. It's been MLB.com. It's had some different voters through recent years, especially after Rick passed away or Rick retired.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay, my next question is, how do they calculate WAR from freaking Babe Ruth?
So they don't have like defense and stuff like that, right? But they have the numbers that he put up, and WAR does rely on how often a guy plays, how many bases a guy produces, total bases, how often a guy strikes out, you know, all these things that are part of like the WAR cocktail. Right, those are available, and so you can reverse engineer it.
You're missing a whole half of the whole defensive side.
Well, you understand that going in, right? Like it's the same kind of thing with catchers, right? The modern catcher, they're able to do pitch framing. You're not going to be able to go like Johnny. How did Johnny Bench pitch frame? Right? You can have an idea. You can go back and do video. So you can have theory, but so that you actually have to. It's one of the things with the Hall that you think about is compare against eras. And I think this gets to like really like one of the questions you asked me earlier was about like the style of game, right? Like, how do you look at somebody from the 80s when striking out, they were allergic to striking out, and so they're putting the ball in play, and so you like, that's the style of play. But you have all these guys with like low OBPs but high hits, right? Low on base percentage, and they weren't walking. It's because they didn't value it in the same way that, say, now you value slug, or we've seen changes in how pitchers look at wins. So it's that kind of thing, right? Like, if the game doesn't value wins, and 10 years from now we look back on the current game and go, well, we're going to vote for wins, we're doing it wrong because we didn't understand the context of at the moment. So you do have to look at the eras, and you understand that the stats are missing some of the vitals that we currently have.
I see. That makes sense. Yeah.
Can I ask some questions now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask one more?
Oh, sure.
How did it, based on that, is that just the offensive WAR?
What do you mean? For like Babe Ruth and
Johnny Bench. That's just his offensive WAR.
Well, I mean, they can look at like some of the defense stuff that factors in, right? That they do have, but like pitch framing is an advancement that Fangraphs has made, like literally contemporary advancement. Like while we've been sitting here, they've probably gotten better at doing it. Like this is real time stuff that is constantly evolving and improving. And it's one of the reasons why like you could have looked at Yadier Molina's defensive numbers, like some of the advanced metrics 10 years ago, and you would have been like, this doesn't really line up with what we know to be true that he's shaping games defensively. Like, you would have his caught stealings, you would have, but like something would be off, right? Like, and now you can look at, now that they've updated, you can go to FanGraphs and you can look at Yadier Molina, and he'll be one of the best defensive players of all time when you look at WAR of all time. And doesn't that kind of feels right?
Yeah.
Right? So you can see how stats can improve and evolve over time.
Yeah. I mean, still some other stuff is not covered, like pitch calling.
Right. No.
Because that's one of Yadi's biggest thing is, like,
yeah,
understanding what's going on, you know?
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's part of why stats are only, like, the beginning, right? Like, they give you direction like a compass, but they can't tell you the ultimate destination. You have to, actually
take that into account when you vote for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Long ago, I voted for Yadi to win the MVP, and McCutchen won it, and he got 28 of the 30 votes, and mine was one of the votes not for him. I voted for Molina. And I was asked how I could do that, and I said, look, part of this is reporting, and if I failed to know or learn that McCutchen was calling pitches from center field, that's on me. But otherwise, I know Yadi was calling these pitches and shaping this young staff, and in addition to that, he was also like a leading offensive player for the team. And you cannot discount like what his presence meant and the value of that influence. Again, back to like influence over like a good center fielder, right? McCutchen had a great offensive year, but it wasn't like one that was like 50-50 and so overwhelming.
He hit like 330.
Yeah, yeah.
Like 20 or something.
Yeah, classic kind of really good center field numbers and great on base, you know, and he's a good player for a good team, all of that. But like Yadier Molina shaped this young pitching staff, hard not to.
As a catcher, you influence the game so much. That's one of the arguments that was for Cal Raleigh to win it over Aaron Judge.
Absolutely. And I think that would have been, I think he could have. I mean, what the season Cal Raleigh had was incredible.
Yeah.
So you've asked me about like how I've look at players' performance in the past. What do you look at for your own performance, and how much of it is looking at predictive for the future, like what you're doing as far as, you know, pitch selection and things that tell you how you're doing, even if, like, you know, so you don't get bogged down in what the past performance is?
Probably not enough.
Okay.
In that.
Okay.
You know, like, I think that's really important. Pitch selection is huge, of course. I'm trying to do more of that this year, but I'm pretty basic. I'm pretty old school.
What is that? I mean,
I really like average.
Batting average?
Okay. I think batting average is a good sign of somebody who's a good player.
Okay.
And for me, like in my past, whenever I've hit for a good average, everything else is going to be there, you know?
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
Because average, if your average is there, okay, your OBP is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
If your average is there, when I've had a good average, I've hit for power. You know, because I naturally was able to get the ball in the air. Not as much last year for whatever reason, but
yeah.
But that's like if I'm getting my hits, then you know. But then you look into like, okay, well, when am I good? Okay, well, it's when I stay in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be a thing too, but it's hard to think about that stuff and then go play.
What, why? Well, tell me, like, because you feel overwhelmed or you feel like...
So I try to not even look. I don't even want to know anything.
Okay.
I don't want to know what I'm hitting. I don't know what, you know?
Really?
How many, like, anything. Homers, okay. Homers are fine.
Oh, I see. You don't want to know what your stats are. Yeah.
OBP, OPS. I remember in AA, I was like, I would walk in with my head, like, not even looking at the scoreboard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was the year you've gone, won the Texas League MVP.
Yeah. But then you start being like, I'm hitting 280. Okay, well, if I go 6 for 6, I'm going to be back at 300. And that's a common thing people do.
Yeah, well, yeah, you bet. Yeah, you start thinking, or at the beginning of the season, someone told me, like, you cannot ignore when there's a 1 in your batting average, even if it's like day 5.
Yeah.
And you know better, you know mathematically better, you know it's going to be there. But there's something about that.
The human element. Yeah. And I think the best are just, okay, let me see how I can not even pay attention to it and just do your thing. Because then you start chasing hits, and then you start expanding the zone, and then it's a head game. It's definitely a head game.
Do you look at, like, some of the advanced metrics, though, to know kind of know where your swing is from game to game? Does that, all right, what am I getting for my angle? What am I getting for my exit velocity? What barrel rates am I getting? These kind of things. Do you look at those numbers?
Not really.
Bat speed?
No, because I think those are byproducts of different things. Like, I don't need to look at something to tell me my angle is off.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
You feel it.
You feel it. Like, you know.
Or from the results, you know it?
Yeah. Like, okay. There's different feelings. Like, today I hit a ground ball to shortstop. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that's a pitch that needs to be hit in the air.
Gotcha. And why? Because of where it was?
Because where it was. That's my spot where I need to handle that. And, you know, and that's a pitch where I know I can handle that better. And so then you could look at it. It's hard because then you can look at it mechanically. Okay, well, mechanically, I was early and I kind of drifted too far into my front side.
Okay.
Drifting into your front side is good, but if you drift over your front foot.
Yeah, then you.
Like, over the angle of your leg. You have to go into the ground.
Yeah.
But if you go too far and your head maybe goes a centimeter too much, mm-hmm. now what happens is you have to go back.
Right.
So then that creates the energy you just missed. So the barrel comes up a little bit. Mm-hmm. The barrel goes out, and then it comes up a little bit, which causes the rollover.
Okay.
So instead, it's like, okay, when I get to the front side, let me just keep going and push through.
Okay.
Or you can even go back into that and be like, okay, I need to time it better in a sense of I need to get my angles of my load and how I'm loading in my backside to get maybe a little more weight or a little more turn in my hips to now go back downhill so I'm not leaking that little bit.
Because
if I go downhill, now I can go forward as much as I want, and then the barrel stay, and then I'm going front to back, and the barrel can stay and push through. Now I backspin it.
Got it. Okay.
And now it's a homer.
Right. So and that kind of played out today in your bats, right? You had the pitch.
I mean, I don't think. Yeah, I did, but I'm not. I don't do that in the game because it gets crazy.
Okay, but post game, you look back now and you see like, okay, you were able to make that adjustment, and that second time you didn't miss the pitch that you needed to drive.
True.
It was right there, and you did it all. So that's a plus.
It is definitely, and that's what happens, but. It's like, I feel like you have to, I don't know. For me, I think more of a feeling. Like, I'm not going to go and break it down like this and this and this. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be like, I just got a little stuck, like just more fluid. And I might not even make the adjustment.
Right.
Like, because how many times do I make the adjustment and be like, crap, now I over-adjusted. Yeah.
See, I think that's an interesting thing because we are on opposite sides of the stat line, if that makes sense. Like, if I were to tell you, like, you were to ask me, how do you vote for the MVP? And I'm like, I'm just looking for a feeling. You'd be like, what? Like, wouldn't you want to measure that? You know? Right?
Never.
And so you would look at, fans or historians or whoever would look at me like, you voted on a feeling? It's what the word fame means to me. That's how I didn't use stats. I didn't use anything. I didn't want anything. I wanted to vote on a feeling.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting. Like, it'd be a good exercise. Like, what would the ballot look like if I just went with, like, my feel for a guy?
Well, you hear scouts talk about that.
Yeah, you do?
I mean...
Oh, yeah. How they feel, yeah.
Like, the scout who signed me actually told one of the guys I play with, like, yeah, it's an eye test, whatever, but think about how a player makes you feel.
Yeah.
Like, when you watch him, how he makes you feel when you watch him play. Because I don't know, if there's somebody who plays hard or just gives you a different feeling, those are the guys he, in his words, were going to... And that was Steve Flores, who has signed a lot. He's been a scout forever and signed a lot of really good players.
I think one of the things that we're seeing that's really interesting is that, like, that feel that, like, scouts have, baseball coaches have, is it's validated by the stats, right? Like, now we're able to, like... Like, what they were able to do instinctually, a lot of times, lines up with what then the stats then say. Like, 100%. You know, like, when we, this is, I talked to Tekoa Roby about this, and you spent a lot of time with Tekoa. I talked to him about it last year. I was like, when did your fastball go from somebody saying, man, that's got a lot of giddy up, to then describing the analytics behind why? Because we used to hear all the time about how pitchers has giddy up, or it's heavy in the zone, or it rises, or everything like that. And now we know, well, it's spin rate, right? And we can measure that.
Yes.
And so, you know, for 50 years, people would talk about fastballs with rise or giddy up. They were talking about spin. Now we have the data to kind of say, well, they were right all along, and how tough that pitch is to hit. So I think there's like a merger there where... And it's probably the same with an MVP ballot or a Hall of Fame ballot, where the feel then lines up with the stats.
Yeah. The hitting side of it is interesting because there's definitely a lot less numbers. Because I can look at my numbers and be like, okay, well, I'm hitting the ball on the ground too much. I need to get the ball in the air. I'm not getting hard contact. Yeah. And it's like, where do I go from there? I guess you could go mechanics. Yeah. But then you go mechanics in the game, and then you start going crazy, which gets...
Paralysis by analysis.
Yes, yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Pitching is, like, probably similar, but you could throw a slider at 88 with -5 and -2 horizontal and vertical movement, and you're like, I know that pitch is going to work. Hitting, it's like I try a mechanic in the cage, and I'm like, I think that'll work. And then I get to the game.
Yep.
I've done that so many times, raked in the cage. I'm like, this is it. Go in the game. It's just different.
Absolutely. That's the pitchers are ahead. Pitchers have the edge when it comes to, like, manifesting or translating. That's the big word, I guess. Yeah. Translating the data and the kind of laboratory work under the field.
That's why I feel like it's so much feel. Like, hey, I want to feel this. I want to feel like I'm staying through the ball, or I'm, you know, like, different things. And the cool thing about it is I've hit with some pretty big name, like, pretty cool people in terms of their accolades. And
you can name drop. It's okay.
Everybody is saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, in their own way, you know. And but, like, swing down. Everybody, like, they're all saying similar stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you listen to Ted Williams talk about hitting, and he's talking about launch angle.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't 100%. Use that phrase because it wasn't a thing. You know, it's the same language. It's just different. Or it's the same idea. It's just different language. Just we have more information, but the theories all kind of fit together, right? Yeah. They all rhyme. Like, that's the way it is. Like, everything that they talk about with hitting or with voting through, it all rhymes. It's just the words are different.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
You keep hearing the beeping in the background. It's because everything is under construction here at Roger Dean Stadium. Okay, so do you have another question for me?
I want to go, let's see who... I want to hear about, like, a close Hall of Famer or close MVP vote that was difficult or that, like, could have gone either way, and how you go about that.
Okay. So this is MVP vote. I'm trying to think. That was harder for me to come up with off the top of my head. Hall of Fame is every year. Like, it's – and especially now with starters. So – the tough one this year was what to do with the starting pitchers. You had Mark Burley, Felix Hernandez. You're going to look up one. Okay. And then you had Cole Hamels. You had this group of starting pitchers on the ballot that are all of pretty close to the same era, maybe a little bit overlapping eras, right? But how do you compare, like, Mark Burley and what he did versus, like, Felix Hernandez and what he did, right? There's a bulk to Mark Burley's career that Felix Hernandez didn't have, but there's a peak to Felix Hernandez's career that Mark Burley didn't have. And then how do you separate that from Cole Hamels,
yes,
who, if you start going through it now, he's got higher WAR or slightly higher WAR. He's got slightly lower ERA. He's got a lot of the like qualities that are just ahead of maybe some of these other guys who have maybe bigger counting stats. They got 200 wins. Andy Pettit is also in that group. But Andy Pettit, you have to also discuss, like, all right, how does he fit within? How do you look at his admission that he used performance-enhancing drugs? And you, so you take that in. But if you look just on their stats, how do you separate them?
Yeah,
and it's really hard.
Performance enhancers.
So my approach with that has been twofold. One, I'm limited to 10 spots on the ballot. So if I have 12 candidates who I think are worthy, then the hall gives me the tools to pare that list down to 10. I have to make... I can't vote for 12. And I've advocated and I've made the proposal to the hall that we should be able to do that, that they should just ask us yes, no on each guy, that we shouldn't have to tailor. If there are 16 Hall of Famers that we think are on a ballot, we shouldn't have to cleave it down to 10.
I don't like that.
Well, they do it for traffic control, a lot of it, right? Because they don't want to have 1 year where 8 people get in and the next year where no one gets in. So it creates a flow to the induction ceremonies year to year.
You get many ballots, right?
You get many ballots, yeah.
So that's another.
Yeah, that's another thing. So I use it as a tool.
You are meant to get in, you're going to get in.
Right, you get 10. And the sportsmanship and the clause and everything like that, I think of that as a tool to whittle my list down to 10. So the years I had 7, and Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens were part of that 7, I voted for them. There were times I had 12, and I had to make a call between, like, do I not vote for closers, or do I not vote for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens? What do I feel like? Because there's some really good closers there, and I use comparative a lot, like who compares to who and where am I comfortable voting. So that's how I approach it. When you get to the comparing of these pitchers, you just have to find, like, it's really tricky because you have to find where that line is and where you're not going to cross. You know,
yeah.
It's awful. It's like, it's a really tough thing to do. Like, because, and every so often I imagine myself doing this is like saying, hey, you know, player A, or hey, Bobby Abreu, I think you're a Hall of Famer. Come on in. And then A, player B, I don't think you're a Hall of Famer. You got to buy a ticket. And that's like a really hard thing, but you have to commit to it. Because once you set that standard, I feel like you should stick with it.
Yeah. Because there's got to be a line, like you were saying last time, there's got to be a line somewhere. Where is it?
Because if you keep moving it out, you include, you're not going to include everybody, but you include more and more and more.
True.
And, you know, I don't know. The more I do this, the less good I feel I am at it, but probably the better I'm getting at it. Does that make sense?
100%.
But I also think that, like, you can be a small hall person, the elite of the elite of the elite, but a big hall voter, because it takes so much to get into the Hall of Fame. It takes just so much. 75% is it's hard. Try to get 3 out of 4 people to agree. Like, you, are you sharing a place with 3 other guys?
2 other guys.
Okay, 2 other guys. So spring training, you're sharing a place with 3 other guys. You got 4. You need 3 to agree on where to go to dinner. How difficult is that?
Yeah. Very difficult.
Yeah.
That is very difficult. Yeah. Which is how it should be.
It is how
it should be.
It
should be an exclusive club.
It should be, yeah. It should absolutely
be. You know?
Be.
It's... Yeah, that's what I think. Right. I just looked at their numbers.
What do you think?
I don't really know anything. I'm just a big ERA guy. So.
Yeah, and they're all pretty similar.
They're all similar.
Yeah.
I like Felix Hernandez's dominance.
So, yeah, his peak is really good. He had 10 years where he was amazing, and 10 years is a long time.
Yeah. Burley, obviously, great pitcher. Mm-hmm. But he didn't, I don't feel like, I don't know. Hall of Fame just feels like, to me, you're the top notch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Burley was probably in that conversation, but probably...
He's got a statue in Chicago. He has that long run of 200 innings, year after year after year. He just got there differently, you know? Like, he's not, you know, and that's also something that I try not to, like, hold it. Like, what do you do with the skills and the role that you had? Yeah. Like, what did Billy Wagner do with the role he had? He wasn't a starter, so he wasn't going to get that many innings. Wouldn't get that many wins. Team needed him to be a reliever. Was he galactically elite in that role? That was the role he had. You know, Jeff Kent, right? People go like, well, he wasn't that great as a second baseman defensively, right? Okay, but that's what the team needed him to be. That's where he fit for his teams, and that's what he played. And, oh, by the way, he went and then socked the most home runs ever by a second baseman. So what did you do within the role that your team needed and the skills you had? Mark Burley wasn't going to strike a whole lot of folks out. So how did he get by? He just out-pitched, maneuvered, placement, strikes, weak contact.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, did he do that at an elite level? You kind of start talking about it, and you're like, man, he did it among the best ever to do it.
Yeah.
So that stands out. I don't know. I mean, it's tough.
Sense.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would... The pitching side for me is definitely more difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
But...
It'd be. I'll come back 10 years from now and ask you about pitchers you faced, and like it'll be interesting, like your view of like pitchers that you stood in the box against, and what makes an elite pitcher. You know, like what to you from the vantage point of the box makes a Hall of Fame pitcher.
Yeah, because that to me, like he's finding ways to get outs. And he's doing a great job at it, obviously. But I'd much rather face him than Felix Hernandez.
Okay.
He's just going to dominate.
Yeah, there you go. Like, yeah.
You know?
That's the difference between looking from the box and looking at the box score.
In theory, though, but you never know. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
All right, so I'll ask this last question. Thank you. This is going. Thank you for the conversation. I'm sure. I look forward to the questions that you come with, at me with after having this. This will be good.
Yeah.
Did you see that McGreevy wanted you to do his PitchCom voice?
Yeah, he showed it. He showed it to me.
All right.
I'm like, I don't. I feel like he's going to make that happen somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know. He really likes... I think his mentality on the mound's very, like... You know how people have the calm?
Chill.
Some people have the calm.
Yeah.
Some people need to be, like, cussed out before they go out.
Yeah.
And McGreevy likes being like, okay, let me relax.
That's cool.
And I guess I just got that surfer voice in me.
Well, that leads me to the last thing I want to ask you is, what will it be like when you're in center field... And you hear your voice calling the pitch, coming over the pitch call.
I'll probably laugh. That would be pretty funny. I didn't even think about that. Dude, just throw a fast one. That would be hilarious.
You'd be out there at center field, Busch Stadium.
So random. Yeah. That would be funny.
Yeah,
because now I think... I don't even know what it is. It's like a robotic...
Yeah, if you can choose different
fastball.
Voices.
Yeah.
Some guys get their catcher's voice, some coach. You can do different things, yeah.
Maybe we'll do that for him. They might call me in the video room to make that happen.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this. This has been great. Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks to Cardinals infielder and, yep, now outfielder, Thomas Sejesi, who spent the time to talk for this podcast just before heading off to the World Baseball Classic to play, shortstop for Team Italy. You can find all the coverage of Thomas Sejesi's move to center field and everything else going on with the Cardinals, Dustin May on the backfields with his sim game, J.J. Weatherholt with his 422-foot home run off of Devin Williams, Ramon Urias, his signing, what he brings, and so much more from my colleague Daniel Guerrero and myself at stltoday.com. coming in the next week. Sports columnist Lynn Worthy will be down here for additional coverage from Cardinals spring training. And of course, you can find all of that constant Cardinals coverage in the pages of the Post-Dispatch and scltoday.com, where you can also get the best podcast in baseball. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts, on Spotify and, of course, on Apple iTunes, where you can listen to it, download it, subscribe, read and react, and give a review. Favorable or not, let me know how the podcast is doing as we storm into the 14th season. For the best podcast in baseball, I'm baseball writer Derek Gould. Talk to you soon from Jupiter, Florida. Or maybe Bradenton, Florida. Or maybe Sarasota, Florida. It kind of depends on when I'm able to pin down this next guest, honestly.